طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the mainstream media. And that is why it is so important that it is broadcast each week on This Week in Palestine. As most of you, I spent the week following the news coming out of Gaza. I gave up on the major media and focused on sources that raise the Palestinian narrative and put the horrendous Hamas raid on Israel in historical context. There were not many. Democracy Now! And Al Jazeera got most of my attention and had the most humanitarian focus. So for the most of you who depended on our most popular media sources, we feature today voices rarely heard in the mainstream. You will hear voices that challenge the lies being told by Israel through the mouths of our government leaders, President Biden being perhaps the worst. You will hear excerpts of the Democracy Now! Coverage that present the Palestinian reality by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, journalist Amira Haas, and Columbia University Professor Rashi Khalidi. Here is Democracy Now!
We go now to Ramallah in the occupied West Bank, where we're joined by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He's a Palestinian physician, an activist, and politician who serves as general secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. He's been a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council since 2006, is also a member of the Palestine Liberation Organization Central Council. Dr. Barghouti, welcome back to Democracy Now! If you can respond to all the developments, most recently, of course, President Biden has just left, your assessment of his visit, and the Arab summit that was canceled by Mahmoud Abbas, who's based where you are in Ramallah, the head of the Palestinian Authority, the Jordanian king, and the Egyptian president after the attack on the hospital, and your assessment of what Israel's saying about that attack.
You know, Amy, I don't know where to start. The atrocities are beyond description. We are subjected now as Palestinians, not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank, to horrifying war crimes, ethnic cleansing, acts of collective punishment against the population of Gaza, where civilians are dying because they don't have water, they don't have electricity, they don't have food, they don't have medicines, and an act of genocide. Every 5 minutes, a Palestinian is killed in Gaza. Every 15 minutes, a Palestinian child is killed in Gaza. And it goes on. My last number is 3,785. I think it's already wrong, because with the passage of each minute, more Palestinians are killed. What did President Biden do? Instead of coming here and telling the Israelis, and he knows very well that the United States is the only country in the world that has leverage over Israel, instead of telling them, stop this atrocity, have ceasefire, so that you can at least save the prisoners that are in Gaza, the Israeli prisoners, he came here to be totally complicit with Israeli war crimes and to push the United States into becoming a participant in these war crimes by sending soldiers to participate in Israeli invasion and in the crimes that are committed against the Palestinian people. He bought every lie that Netanyahu told him, and he kept repeating them. And I don't understand how the American intelligence structures don't tell their president that these are lies. I am sure they know that. The first lie about decapitating children, it turned out to be a big lie. The other lie about raping women, it turned out to be a lie, and that's what Los Angeles and Times apologized about. Then this huge lie about Palestinians killing themselves in their hospital. This huge lie that Israel distributed and the Israeli military did, as they usually do, by telling series of lies and changing them one time after the other. Before I come back to President Biden, let me explain. Israel committed a terrible airstrike on the Baptist hospital run by the Anglican Church, killing no less than 473 Palestinian people, mainly children and women, and injuring more than 300 others. Why? For what? It was all about the Israeli ultimatum that was already, according to WHO, sent to no less than 27 hospitals, including the largest hospital in Gaza, Shifa Hospital, to evict and evacuate so that Israel can conduct its ethnic cleansing of big parts of Gaza at the moment with a plan of ethnically cleansing all of Gaza Strip. The strike was clearly Israeli. The type of explosion is something that no Palestinian militant group has. A huge blast that took the lives of almost 500 people instantly, in less than a minute. That's a power that no Palestinian group has. So it was a big lie. But Israel lied four times in justifying this attack. The first Israeli reaction was that they did the airstrike on the hospital. They admitted it in the first round. And they said they did it because Hamas militants were hiding there. Then they changed the story and they said that Hamas is taking Palestinians as a human shield. Then the third changed the story and said it was Hamas rocket. And then the fourth lie, which is now dominant, is that it was a jihadi rocket. How could the United States repeat these lies and accept them without verifying them? Israel did that before with the case of Shireen Abu Akleh, when they changed their story four times. Each time, in the beginning, they said she was killed by a Palestinian. And gradually, they admitted that it was their crime. Believe me, these lies should not be continued. And the United States should immediately support an immediate ceasefire. The meeting that should have been taking place with the Jordanian king and with the Egyptian president and with Palestinian president did not take place because all these three people realized that Mr. Biden does not want to support ceasefire immediately. And they realized that he's practically supporting the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from Gaza into Egypt. Something that Egypt refused, and something that Jordan refused, and something that all the Arab countries refused. That is the essence of what's happening now. And so Israel now is changing the plan a little bit by pushing all the people from the northern part of Gaza and the middle of Gaza into the southern part. It's already a very small area of less than 140 square miles, becoming now less than 60 square miles with 2.3 million people. They say they push them down for safety, but they continue to bombard them in the south. The game is clear. They want to ethnically cleanse completely Gaza Strip. And they initiated acts of ethnic cleansing already in the West Bank, where 20 Palestinian communities have already been evicted by Israeli terror settlers, where more than 75 Palestinians already killed also in the West Bank. At this very moment, the Israeli army is attacking Tul Karim camp and Nur Shams camp in Tul Karim area, using drones and using also rockets against civilian population in a refugee camp. This is the situation that is getting worse and worse every day. And the real plan, as I can see it, according to what an Israeli minister said, we're going to shrink Gaza size. What does that mean? Annexing the northern part and the middle of Gaza. What will happen to all these hospitals? Let me read to you what World Health Organization says. World Health Organization says that 136 attacks were committed against health facilities in Gaza. during which time 491 Palestinians were killed, 16 health workers were killed, 370 people were injured, 23 Palestinian health ambulances were destroyed, and 26 facilities were completely destroyed or partially destroyed. 77 similar attacks also took place in the West Bank. So nobody can convince us that it was Palestinians who killed Palestinians in that hospital. And nobody should give any justification for the behavior of President Biden. The only conclusion that one can come to is that he cares only about his re-election. He doesn't care even about the lives of Israeli prisoners, neither him nor Netanyahu. Otherwise, why wouldn't they accept ceasefire? Why Netanyahu continues his airstrikes, although these airstrikes already killed 22 Israeli prisoners? They continue because they don't care about Palestinian lives or Israeli lives. And Mr. Biden should listen not to the lies of Netanyahu, but to the noble voice of the Jewish people, the American Jewish people who came to the American Congress to demonstrate and demand one thing: immediate ceasefire. I'm telling you, we're calling on the whole world to immediately stand up, and instead of supporting the genocide and the collective punishment and the hysterical Israeli ethnic cleansing, to support immediate ceasefire so we can stop the killings that are taking place. A ceasefire that could guarantee safe passage to the prisoners, but also that could guarantee humanitarian aid to Palestinians who are now dying out because of thirst, because of starvation, and most importantly, because of lack of medicines and because of a possibility of an epidemic that could start in Gaza because of the suspension of vaccination for children and because of the destruction of sanitary infrastructure. We could see an epidemic of cholera very soon in Gaza. Is that what Mr. Biden wants? Is that what Mr. Netanyahu wants? This is atrocity that should stop. And anybody that doesn't call for a ceasefire immediately will be considered not only complicit with these war crimes, but a participant in them.
And Dr. Barghouti, could you respond to the decision that Biden announced of Egypt opening the Rafah border for 20 humanitarian trucks to enter into Gaza? And what you think the significance of that is, if there is any, and the specific concerns you've raised as a doctor, the tens of thousands of pregnant women in Gaza today, what the fate of patients there are who are in urgent need of medical care and none is available.
Well, one of the most striking scenes was the images of children who died in the uterus of their mothers, because they were pregnant and they were hit. But there are 5,500 Palestinian women who are giving birth this month. And we already received terrible, terrible information about them giving birth in the streets because there is no place to go to. The south of Gaza does not have any space anymore, besides the fact that there is no safe space for anybody. Israel has already destroyed more than 80,000 homes and houses of people, and people have no place to go to. And there is very high risk now of an increased infant mortality, perinatal mortality, and maternal mortality because of the situation that Palestinians find themselves in. No sanitary facilities, no drinking water, no running water, no proper sewage system. It's a total disaster. And total humanitarian crisis. You asked me about something about President Biden. Can you repeat the question,
yes,
please?
Yes, about the decision to let convoys, humanitarian convoys, 20 in from Egypt into Gaza.
Imagine 2.3 million people already deprived of water, electricity, medications, and food for 12 days. And you send 20 trucks for them? What does that change? It's less than a drop in the ocean. That's much less than what people need. It becomes only a cover of the crime that is happening. I'm not against, of course, bringing these trucks, whatever they can help. But that's not what we need. We need an open corridor so that food, water, electricity, as well as medications can get to people. We have medical teams in Gaza. We have Palestinian medical relief teams working along the work of the Red Crescent as well as the Ministry of Health. And they are calling us every day, telling us we don't have any more medications. We don't have even dressing to help the injured people. We don't have proper sanitary facilities. How can we deal with patients in these conditions? You know, patients were treated and surgical operations took place the other day on the stairs of the hospital because there were no beds left. And the massacre that happened in the Baptist Hospital was so shocking and practically brought the whole health structure down. And now already three hospitals stopped working because they have no electricity, because they don't have sufficient medications. It's a humanitarian disaster that is building up. And the only explanation is that Netanyahu wants to solve what he thinks is the demographic problem of Israel, being that number of Palestinians today in West Bank and Gaza Strip and in Israel itself is equal to the number of Israeli Jewish people. He wants to eliminate that. First, by ethnically cleansing the 2.3 million people in Gaza, pushing them out of Gaza, and then annexing Gaza Strip, and then initiate a process of ethnic cleansing for Palestinians in the West Bank, first in Area C, and then in the rest of the West Bank. That's why the King of Jordan is so shocked about these plans, because he knows that he's coming next. After they finish with Gaza, they will move to the West Bank. This is something that nobody should accept. I never thought, I admit, and I was wrong, I never thought that Israel could dare to conduct ethnic cleansing in the 21st century. And unfortunately, I was wrong. That's exactly what they are doing today. And I ask the question. They said that Israel has the right to respond. Okay, they responded. They responded. They already killed almost 4,000 people. How many thousands of children? How many thousands of patients? How many thousands of women and men should die before Israel decides it's enough? Or should all the millions of Palestinians disappear from Palestine and disappear from this world so that these fascists, and I call them fascists and Nazis, that are governing Israel would be satisfied?
Dr. Barghouti, I just want to quote to you, I think this is the senior minister to whom you were referring, comments he made, Israel's foreign minister Eli Cohen, saying in an interview with Israel's Army Radio on Wednesday, he said, quote, that at the end of this war, not only will Hamas no longer be in Gaza, but the territory of Gaza will also decrease. So if you could talk more about that, elaborate on your point about what precisely they intend to do with Gaza, and then talk about what's happening in the West Bank. You said it's also the site of war crimes, of ethnic cleansing, but also the protests that are directed against the Palestinian Authority there. We had earlier in headlines that the protests across the West also taken aim at the ruling Palestinian Authority, which has launched a violent crackdown on demonstrations. A 12-year-old Palestinian girl named Razan Nasrallah was shot and killed by PA security forces Tuesday during protests in Jenin. So if you could talk about that, the situation in the West Bank.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you asked about something else before the West Bank.
Yes, I just cited to you the person whom I thought you were mentioning earlier, the Israeli foreign minister about.
Yes.
Please.
Eli Cohen. Mm-hmm. The foreign minister of Israel means that Israel is turning now, since Egypt is not allowing the ethnic cleansing of people in Gaza to Egypt up till now, he's turning to Plan B. And Plan B is to remove everybody in the northern part of Gaza and in Gaza City itself. That is about 1.1 to 1.2 million people. Move them down to the southern parts of Gaza. And then annex that area. Cutting down the size of Gaza from 140 square miles to maybe less than 50 square miles or maybe 60 square miles. This is the only explanation of what he said, shrinking the size of Gaza, bringing it down, and they think, the Israeli government thinks, that if they cluster all these 2.3 million people in such a small area, then the pressure will be so huge that Egypt will be obliged to open the borders and let them out of Gaza. And in that case, Israel would have achieved its original plan of total ethnic cleansing, pushing Palestinians out of Palestine into the Sinai. Mind you, 70% of these people have already been ethnically cleansed by Israel in 1948. They were displaced from parts of the 520 communities that Israeli troops erased to earth back in 1948, committing 50 massacres and pushing Palestinians out of Palestine. They want to repeat the same ethnic cleansing again. But let me tell you, this is not the last plan of Israel. Netanyahu made it very clear. Maybe I am repeating that. He carried the map of Israel in the United Nations in front of the whole world weeks ago, in which that map, the map of Israel, included the annexation of all of the West Bank and the annexation of all the occupied Gaza Strip. This is their plan: annexation, ethnic cleansing, and committing genocide against Palestinian population. But in response to your question about West Bank, let me tell you the situation here is very dangerous, is very grave. First of all, Israel imposed practically a process of fragmenting the West Bank into 224 small islands or ghettos, if you want, separated from each other by no less than 640 military Israeli checkpoints, many of which are closed completely. For instance, Jericho now is totally closed. And then the wall, of course, itself, and the so-called bypass roads, which are segregated roads exclusive for Israelis. Many, many Palestinians cannot move now from one area to another. Our health work is becoming very, very complicated in the West Bank because we cannot move medications, we cannot move medical teams. And the worst situation is in the so-called Area C, which represents no less than 60% of the West Bank, where settlers are continuously attacking Palestinians. The other day, Israeli terror settlers attacked the village of Kusra in Nablus area, killed three Palestinian civilians. The army, the Israeli army, came and killed a fourth one. The next day, when the people were having the funeral of these four Palestinians killed, the settlers came back again and killed two more people, a father and a son. Six people in one village in less than 24 hours. The terror of settlers is everywhere. But in addition to that, the Israeli army is conducting wide-range campaign of arresting Palestinians. According to my information, no less than 750 Palestinians have been arrested during the last week, and the number is growing, which means that the number of prisoners in Israeli jails is more than 6,300 now, many of whom are held under the so-called administrative detention, which means they don't know why they are in jail, they don't have any legal due process, their lawyers cannot even defend them because they don't know what they are charged for, including 260 children who are in Israeli jails at the moment. Add to that the fact that already more than 75 Palestinians have been killed, and the Israeli army now thinking that everybody is busy with what's happening in Gaza. They are now conducting military operations against Palestinian civil areas, including Tul Karim refugee camp, and before that, Jenin refugee camp, and this can go on. So it's a very dangerous situation and a very risky situation
for
all Palestinians.
Dr. Barghouti, we only have a minute, but what about and why then the Palestinian Authority violent crackdown on demonstrations with the 12-year-old Palestinian girl, Hassan Nasrallah, shot and killed in Jenin?
That was also a crime committed by Palestinian security forces, and it should not have happened. It is unacceptable to encounter demonstrators with gunfire. That is unacceptable. We're not calling, of course, for chaos or internal division here among Palestinians. We have enough of what we have in front of us, fighting the Israelis. But the reality is that the behavior of the security apparatus is unacceptable, including suppression of freedom of expression. People were mad. They were angry at what was happening in Gaza, about the killing of people inside that hospital. And maybe they made some, I mean, they went out of control. But responding to that by shooting Palestinians, that's the last thing that we can accept or should we should accept.
Dr. Mustafa Guti,
I just wanted to say that they have to also abide by international law and stop this wrongdoing.
Dr. Barghouti is a Palestinian physician, activist, politician, serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
To talk more about Israel's bombardment of Gaza, as well as Wednesday's historic Jewish-led protests in Washington, we're joined by the longtime Israeli journalist Amira Haas, the Haaretz correspondent for the Occupied Palestinian Territories based in Ramallah. Her latest piece is headlined, "With No Water or Electricity from Israel, Gazans Risk Dehydration and Disease." Haas is the only Israeli Jewish journalist to have spent 30 years living in and reporting from Gaza and the West Bank. Her books include Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege. Amira Haas joins us today from New York. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Amira. If you could talk about, this is the first time that we're having you on since this crisis began, your response to what's happening and the latest news.
It's very hard to add anything after, of course, what Dr. Mustafa said. It was in such details, describing the horrors, and unfortunately, I'm not in the country. I came a few days before all this hell started, and I was yesterday at the demonstration in D.C. after a talk I gave at Georgetown. So I was in the demonstration not to cover it, but to be part of a group that adds that. First of all, demands to put an end and to declare immediate ceasefire, and I wanted to share to be with people that we share common feelings of grief, of fear for the people that we know and that we love, of mourning for the people that we know and we love, people both Jews and Israel and Palestinians. People who can say at the same time can be emotional and rational, can be appalled by what happened on Saturday, October the 7th, and at the same time say it is not history did not begin with October 7th. People who grieve and are pained by what is happening, and I feel that every word that I say is hollow because. It's not enough. The words that I need do not exist in our dictionaries to describe the horror that my friends in Gaza now go through. And we are here, and yes, we gather and we meet and we talk and we talk again and we come on our TV programs. But it's, we don't reach the main people. We don't reach the as Dr. Mustafa said, we don't reach the American leaders who are the only ones who could force Israel to stop this carnage now. And we don't reach Western countries who could also put some pressure. And we don't reach the Israeli public that is so drunk with the will to take revenge of what happened on October 7th that does not even know one detail. And even if it knew one detail about Gaza, it doesn't care because it just wants a revenge. But revenge, I think, is not enough to explain what is happening. The Israeli government is carrying on the political program of the extreme fascist, messianic, religious right-wing settler right-wing party led by Bezalel Smotrich, who already in 2017 said that he has a plan for Palestinians. They have three options, he told the Palestinians. You either give in and accept that you will never have a state, you'll never be free, you'll never have your right for self-determination materialized, and then you can live as fifth grade, sixth grade, whatever individuals in this in Israel. The second option for you is to emigrate, as we call sometimes by transfer, by willful transfer, expulsion by consent. And the third option, if you don't agree to give in, and if you don't agree to emigrate, and you resist, the Israeli army will know what to do with you. And this is what is happening now, both in Gaza and the West Bank. Israel is carrying out the plan, the political plan of extreme fascist settlers colonizing right wing. This is, for years, people on the Israeli left have been warning about the brutalization if things continue, the brutalization that might come to a place of no return. And I never thought that I always hoped that when I warned about the danger of brutalization, the possibility of brutalization, that this warning would work, that it, we will not reach it. And I'm so afraid to say now that we reach it, that we've reached it, and the world and the Western world is appallingly doesn't intervene to stop it. You know, I was at the demonstration yesterday and I cried. Maybe I hold myself not to cry all these terrible days, not much, only sometimes, but I cried when some people spoke about their grandparents, Holocaust survivors, and I felt I was there also to represent my dead parents who are Holocaust survivors in this, call to the world to stop. You know, how can they stand on the side and do nothing to stop this terrible slaughter? I cannot bear myself talking here safely in New York while I know what 2 million people, more than 2 million people are going through, and nothing can justify what is being, what Israel, what we, what my tax money is causing right now. I don't know if my tax money is now the behind the missile that might kill one of my good friends, loved friends in Gaza. This is really appalling beyond words.
Amira, in your latest piece for Haaretz, you write about your family, your friends who are still in Gaza, in Tel al-Hawa, in Gaza City. Israel's ordered Palestinians to leave the northern part and go south. That's where Gaza City is in the north. Can you talk about them, what options they have, their decision to stay, and also President Biden giving a major address tonight, coming back and saying he's going to get the border open so 20 trucks can come in with some supplies.
That's a joke. Anything which is not a complete ceasefire, immediate ceasefire, is a drop in an ocean is a cliche, but it is it's less than a drop in the ocean. I mean, my friend who wrote to me, her brother-in-law is in a wheelchair, half paralyzed. They couldn't leave because they said, how can we leave the house with him? And we cannot leave him behind. And her mother is old. So they are there. I cannot even imagine what they are being through. She just sent me a flower this morning. They had a little shred of internet, so she sent me a flower responding to my WhatsApp some hours earlier. I have friends cramped in a school in Nusayrat refugee camp, and a mother a refugee of 48. She was a child in 48 and have been seen so many wars since then.
We have 30 seconds and then we're continuing this conversation and we will post.
So I think of all the, also the sick people, sick parents that my friends are staying with them because they don't want to leave them alone in dying under the bombing. And so they didn't save themselves in order to be with their parents.
Amira Haas, we're going to continue this conversation and post it at democracynow.org and play it on Democracy Now! Amira Haas is longtime Israeli journalist and correspondent for Haaretz and the occupied Palestinian territories, normally based in Ramallah. Palestinian officials are accusing Israel of killing over 500 people in an airstrike on a hospital in Gaza City where thousands of civilians had sought refuge. Israel's denying responsibility, claiming the explosion was caused by a failed rocket fired by the militant group Islamic Jihad. Palestinian officials have blasted Israel's claim, pointing out Israel, the military, had already hit the hospital just days before. As we continue to look at Israel's war on Gaza, we're joined by Rashid Khalidi, the Edward Said Professor of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University, a renowned Palestinian-American scholar. He's the author of a number of books, including his latest, The 100 Years War on Palestine. Professor Khalidi's new piece for The New York Times is headlined, "The U.S. Should Think Twice About Israel's Plans for Gaza." We're going to go to that in just a minute, Rashid, what the U.S. should be thinking about right now. But if you can begin by responding to these developments of the last 24 hours with the explosion at Al-Ahli Hospital and the significance of this.
Well, it's obviously had an enormous significance. It led to the cancellation of a summit that was planned for Amman with President Biden. The Arab participants all pulled out after this atrocity. I think it's also led to increased anger all over the Arab world. There are demonstrations in at least 8 or 9 Arab capitals as a result of this. There was already rage at blanket American support for Israel, and I think this has increased that. I think that it is very hard to believe, given that Israel has threatened hospitals and schools in the past, and it's hit hospitals and schools in the past, and that the kinds of weapons used by Islamic Jihad and Hamas have very limited warheads, that this could have been, as the Israelis claim, a misfire. As you reported, a piece of video that they put up turns out to have been dated from a period after the attack on this hospital. In any case, whoever was responsible, the result will be enormous anger at the United States for its support of Israel, as well as a further increase in this enormous death toll inside Gaza.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, the Palestinian legislator and medical doctor himself, said they actually had, in a very short period of time, a number of explanations of what happened. At first, they didn't say this. They said that Hamas was operating underneath the hospital. Then they said they were using Palestinians as human shields, sort of to explain what had happened. Then they came up with this. Now, I wanted to ask you, we had on Sharif Abdelkaddous, who this award-winning documentary, The Killing of Shireen Abu Akleh, won the George Polk Award for that, documenting what Israel said about the murder of this Palestinian-American journalist. They first said she was killed by a Palestinian gunman, then said evidence was inconclusive. Then after enormous pressure and multiple investigations by many news outlets and human rights groups, they said they likely killed her, but not intentional, and caught in crossfire, something that was disproven by human rights group after forensic architecture study of the whole thing. Showing it was an Israeli sniper, Professor Khalidi.
I mean, Israel has an enormously successful public relations machine. It took them, I think, 45 minutes to put out the specific cover story on this one, and it was immediately knocked down, as I think you've already reported, when it turned out that the piece of film that they produced actually dated 40 minutes after the attack on the hospital.
The New York Times pointed that out, the timestamp. And then they actually retracted the video from X, from Twitter.
Precisely. Precisely. I mean, they have a well-oiled machine to manufacture cover stories for everything they do. They have been warning hospitals that they are targets since before, just after this attack, the initial attack out of Gaza on the 7th of October. They hit this hospital the other day, as you just reported. They hit a school today. If you read the Israeli press, you have senior Israeli generals and retired generals talking about places like hospitals and schools as targets because they claim there are Hamas bunkers beneath them. So it's hard not to accept that this was an Israeli airstrike or an Israeli bombardment. In any case, I think here perception is reality. Given that Israel has dropped 6,000 bombs at least on the Gaza Strip in the last 11 days, it's very hard to believe that it will be very hard, at least for people in the Middle East, who know how Israel systematically lies about what it does in military operations, to believe that this was anybody else than Israel. And I think that's the important fact to retain. People in Palestine, people in the Arab world, people in everywhere except in the American, Western European media bubble are going to chalk this up to Israel's attack on Gaza.
So talk about your piece, the U.S. should think twice about Israel's plans for Gaza. Explain what you see unfolding now and respond to President Biden sitting down with the Prime Minister Netanyahu today and saying the other team did it, attacking the hospital, and go on from there.
Well, I mean, the president has bonded the United States to Israel at the hip since very soon after this horrible escalation started. And in so doing, he's made the United States responsible in the eyes of the world for everything. And this is the latest example of that. He's basically read from an Israeli teleprompter, as he seems to do routinely when anything relating to the Middle East comes up. It's almost as if his lines are scripted in Tel Aviv at the Israeli Defense Ministry. Where their disinformation headquarters are located. And he has, I think, put the United States in a position that I am not entirely sure anybody in his administration realizes. The United States is going to be vilified, not just in the Middle East, as a result of its unlimited support for Israel. What we are seeing now is only the beginning. The munitions that are being sent, the aircraft carriers that have been sent to the Eastern Mediterranean, the huge bill that they're going to put before Congress for, I've seen a figure of $100 billion, is going to cement in people's minds the idea that the United States and Israel are one, which means that whatever happens in Gaza going forward in terms of people being killed, innocent civilians being killed, in terms of population being expelled, basically we're talking about ethnic cleansing of northern Gaza, and heaven forbid people actually being forced out of Gaza into Egypt, which is still a possibility, even though the Egyptians have resisted. All of these things will be put down not just to Israel, but to the United States. And I don't think they fully realize, or if they do, they haven't done anything about it, that this is what the president has, this is where the president has put the United States, for whatever reason. Electoral reasons, his own personal sympathy for Israel, it really doesn't matter. We are now in a situation where the United States, in my view, has put itself in a more precarious position in the Middle East than it has any time since the 1967 war.
Talk about what's happening on the northern border, on the Israel-Lebanon border, and Hezbollah, and the back-and-forth rocket fire that's going on there, and what this could signify.
Well, I mean, the most apocalyptic scenario, which I hope and pray does not come about, would be a full-scale war on the northern border between Hezbollah and Israel. That has the potential to draw many other actors in and turn into an even wider war than that, possibly, heaven forbid, involving Syria and Iran, and then indeed perhaps the United States. That would be a real apocalyptic scenario. I have a sense that the United States, Iran, and Hezbollah and Israel are all reluctant to go too far down that path. Any one of them might do something that could provoke that kind of escalation. But the real problem is unintended consequences of actions that are out of control. Whatever Israel or Hezbollah or Iran and the United States may want, there may be actions that will precipitate a rapid escalation. And that would really, I mean, the situation is appalling as it is. It really would be infinitely worse. The devastation of Lebanon that would follow, the involvement of northern communities in northern Israel would be devastated as well. But the possibility of that growing even wider is to me terrifying.
Talk about who Biden hears. I mean, on the one hand, you have Jordan canceling the summit. He was going to meet with the king, with the Egyptian president Sisi, and with Mahmoud Abbas, head of the Palestinian Authority, who turned around as soon as the bombing happened and said he wouldn't participate. Then Jordan canceled. Now the U.S. is saying they canceled it mutually. But what exactly this means? So the only image is President Biden hugging Israeli President Herzog and the Prime Minister Netanyahu at the airport when he arrived. But even at home, State Department officials afraid to raise the issue of Palestinian deaths. HuffPo had a very interesting piece on thin ice. Some Biden administration staffers feel stifled discussing the horrors in Gaza. And they talk about a call made by the head. Let me see if I can find this. A call with Muslim staffers where they were told to talk about their concerns. And they talked about being afraid of being fired, of being blacklisted, if they dared raise the actual concern they have about what's happening and what the death toll could be and the position that President Biden is taking right now.
We are moving into a McCarthyite era where expression of sympathy for Palestinians is equated with terrorism and maybe met with police state tactics. Students are being visited by the FBI. I'm not in the least surprised that a government is sending the FBI to talk to student activists, is clamping down on its own employees who dare to express humanitarian sentiments. You are required now to utter a mantra in which you exclusively talk about Israeli suffering. And if you do not do that, you are branded and doxxed and so on and so forth. That's happening in the academic, in academia, in universities. It's happening in companies. And it's, I am sure, happening within the federal government. I have no information about that. But that is in line with the administration's position, which is that this is a one-sided affair in which on the one side is absolute evil, something which, according to administration spokesman, is worse than ISIS, Daesh. And with that kind of Manichaean point of view, clearly anyone who expresses any dissent, you know, you are supporting absolute evil if you talk about anything but the unlimited suffering of Israelis. Now, the suffering of Israelis is unquestionable, but that should be the only obsession of the president and his men and women. Puts the United States in a position where maybe in a sound bubble of the United States, the so-called Western world, it's comfortable. But with the rest of the world, that will not wash, including countries that are not particularly supportive of Palestine, countries like India, China, and so forth. Those are countries that, and other parts of the world, I think, see things the very, very same way. So I don't know that these people understand the degree to which they're harming this country. By this kind of blind, one-sided Israel-first approach.
Let me ask you, Rashid Khalidi, if you were president, if you were President Biden, what would you do right now?
What would I do right now? I would immediately call for a ceasefire. I would make sure that the hostages were released immediately. It is unconscionable that they be held. That would require a negotiation between Israel and Hamas about what the terms for that release would be. I would insist on that. it is absolutely urgent those people be gotten out. Most of those are innocent civilians, certainly the civilians amongst them, or many of them are innocent civilians. The second thing I would do would be to say to Israel, look, there is this Palestine question. It's been the problem for 75 years. If you don't address it, the United States will not be willing to offer unlimited support. And addressing it means talking about Palestinian self-determination, talking about ending the occupation, talking about rolling back settlements, not limiting the unlimited expansion of settlements. I mean, there's a whole set of things which, without which, you will never have a resolution of this. And so I would work towards a lasting resolution of a struggle that's been going on, as I say in the book, for more than 100 years. Instead of yet another Band-Aid, yet another attempt to stabilize a status quo, which is massively unfavorable to the Palestinians and which will only lead to more suffering for everybody concerned. That is an idealistic position, perhaps. But I don't think that anybody who has any sense of how this is likely to develop would say anything different, frankly.
You have been listening to Mustafa Barghouti, Amira Haas, and Rashid Khalidi as they appeared on Democracy Now! And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. You can also online stream This Week in Palestine live on Friday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, originating on KKRN.org, a progressive community radio station located in Round Mountain, California. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.